Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer. So let's bring her out. The star attraction. The one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold.
So you're doing stand-up. And some of the things in your book that I loved that, first of all, Jerry getting up every day and writing for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Like, I used to try to sit and write, and I have a notebook. I bring it everywhere I go. Right, I have a thought, and I get on stage that night, and I go, okay, let's work this shit out. You know, like, that is a whole other... And you realize it's just the way our minds work differently. You know what I mean? But he really is so prolific. You start going on the road, right? And you're traveling a little bit.
Well, let me tell you, not really. I mean, I did some of the little gigs around, you know, the one-nighters.
Yeah, there was the Long Island. There was New Jersey. Right. There was like Westchester, Pennsylvania. Yeah. Yeah. There was like all these things around.
There was something called King of Prussia. I don't know if you ever did that gig.
That one. Oh my God. I feel like all this shit is coming. Did you do the, what was it at Amber something cafe at the, in Pennsylvania? All right, go ahead. And the East, remember East Side Comedy Club in Long Island?
Go, yeah. Well, I think it's still around here, but I, for the most part, was an in-town comedian. That's been sort of my whole life is like, I like being in town because right. I also have this other track going where I want to get acting work and things like that. And so I started playing colleges. Like right. That was how I, that's so that's I played how, hundreds of colleges
right.
through NACA. So,
okay. Now, before we get to that, there's something else we have in common. Okay.
Okay.
You had a bunch of jobs. I want you to know that I also worked at an elevator company. I worked at the elevator repair company.
What?
where people would call. I was like the pick up the phone. My elevator's broken. And you worked at Otis Elevator. I didn't work at Otis Elevator, but I worked.
That was the number. Repair. Yeah. That's the exact job I had.
Yeah. I had that exact job.
I was the service dispatcher for Midtown Manhattan for Otis Elevator.
Mm-hmm. I just picked up the phone and said broken elevator. And then someone else would dispatch. But yeah, isn't that fucking crazy?
Where was this office?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe in the 30s. I don't know.
Mine was Mine was on Third Avenue. Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking crazy with the same person. Okay. Incredible. You also learned from Jerry Seinfeld. If you don't know who that is, then go fuck yourself. That you should never compare yourself to other comedians.
Yes.
Which I love that because that is so true. And I tell comedians that all the time.
You do.
There's no one like you. There's no one else there. That's you. Right. You're you. You know, that's the thing about stand-up.
And it's hard to do. I will say it's hard to do.
It is. It's really hard because you're like, why did that person get that? And then you realize, oh, they're 20 years younger than me. They have big tits. They're 5'8" and blonde hair. Okay. So you start doing these colleges. Now, NACA, for everyone, is a National Association of College, blah, blah.
And campus activities.
Yeah. And you were doing a lot of colleges, which was good because you could make, I remember.
Yeah.
I would make like 800 or 1,000, but I did like lunchrooms. It was like ridiculous.
You did Nooners? Did you do Nooners?
Yeah, I did Nooners. Nooners.
Yeah.
And you know what I noticed doing colleges? That the better the school academically, the better the audience. Like,
oh my God. I had that same exact thing.
Right?
Yes, I started. Amazing. I mean, you should see me at Lafayette or Lehigh or any right. Or Amherst. I'm killing. Yeah.
Right. And then you go and it's like, fuck you. You don't have an agent or manager and you start sending postcards. I love this story. Everywhere you go, you send a postcard.
To get a commercial agent in LA. When I moved to LA. This is when I moved to LA.
1987, you're like, you know what? I'm done here. I'm going to move
to LA. It's actually 86, yeah. I moved to LA in 86. So no, I'm just, sorry.
Okay, so.
Yeah. No, I wanted to go to LA away.
Before you go to LA, can we just talk about Catch a Rising Star for 1 minute?
Of course,
you know,
of course.
That was really my home club, Catch a Rising Star. And I can't pass First Avenue.
I know you write in your book that you've known Lewis that whole time.
Since I'm like, yes. Lewis was the bartender. Lewis, who is the head of the New York Comedy Festival and who is also, you know, the talent coordinator at Caroline's on Broadway. He was the bartender. And he used to be like, you're going to get on, Gold. You get on. And, you know, I just sat there. We hung out. Like, people don't realize, you know, there's no TikTok. There's no social media. There's you and your notebook and you're fucking 12 to 15 minutes and that's it. It didn't matter. Like, when you didn't know who was in the audience, like it was really exciting because you never knew who was, especially a Catch.
Well, what was the deal? Well, were you getting on a Catch? Were you getting on late?
I would get on really late. I would stay there all night and I would get on late, which was good because, you know, there wasn't a lot of pressure, but the band and the wait staff laughed at me and I knew I was funny.
That's awesome.
And Lloyd, the bass player. And yes. Like, you're really fun. And Eddie Rabin, the piano player. And I was just like, they're like, no, you're real. And I was like, really? And, you know, half the time it was just the mob who, you know, owned the club with their mistresses. But I didn't care. Like, I watched so many great people, Ronnie Shakes. Like, I remember all these like amazing comics getting up there. And I really got to watch them. And I was the backup, too, because, you know. Which I write about in my book, that Chris Rock and I were the backup. So no one had a phone. There was no cell phones. If you were stuck on a subway or in a cab and you couldn't get to your spot on the weekends, they would have someone sitting at the bar to.
Yeah, I did that. I did that. And they paid you for that.
$50. $50. That whole, I remember seeing Carol Leifer walk in there. I was like, oh my God, you know,
Elaine Carol Leifer, Wayne Fetterman recorded her act once. Yeah.
So you leave in 87, which is weird. in a way, because I mean, it's not weird. It just shows that you are like, okay, did this. Now I'm going to be going here and doing this. So you wanted to get a commercial agent. You moved to LA.
Yeah.
No one's responding.
Nothing.
And you decide you are going to write a postcard to this agent wherever you go. And yeah, you make it funny.
Every postcard was funny. Yeah.
And it was from wherever you were. So like example, like dear so-and-so.
Well, it would always be, here I am in Missoula, Montana. And then the postcard would always be like a picture. This was my gag, basically. It would be a picture of something from Missoula.
Right.
But then way in the background, there'd be like a car or something. So it would always be about that little thing in the back. That's my rental car. You know, so it was right, just stupid little things like right, that. So just so he knew I was working and I was generating something. Somebody was interested right, in me. And eventually, yeah, it took a, you know, over a year, almost 2 years. Yeah.
And then he took you.
He called me in, met me. I was like, all right, I'll send you out. And luckily, I got a call back. Something, I don't know if your listeners know, but that means you get weeded down too. And so, and he's still my agent today.
What's his name?
Doug Ely.
Jewish?
No, I don't think he is. I don't think Doug is. He's, but okay, he's just a great guy. I mean, he's like,
that's, see, your friend. That's amazing. You are doing clubs there. You're working the clubs. Do you end up working at the Improv in LA?
The Improv becomes my home. Yeah, right? my home club.
You're doing the clubs. You're doing commercials. You start getting commercials, little bit parts, voiceovers, right? And you do.
I'm waiting for it. Wayne, do you recognize this voice? Hey, Wayne, I remember I was a waitress at the Improv and you.
No, Wayne, here's my favorite thing. The Bob Hope thing. Was that planned?
Planned. This is before I've even done stand up when I met Bob.
Before Hope. You've done stand up.
I'm at NYU. This is when I'm at Weinstein.
Oh, that was at NYU. Okay, you're so young. And you ask Bob Hope, where was that?
This was the show that was on before Letterman took over in June 23rd, 1980. So it was in the late 70s, so 79 probably. And it was America Alive with something Mark Linkletter's kids.
Yeah.
Mike Linkletter. I can't remember his first name right now. And that was the show. It's just a talk show during the day.
And you get up and you ask. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's it. And then, so we heard Bob Hope was there and he wanted young comedians there. I don't know if you know this. In the crowd that day, and I had never met him, Carol Leifer, Jerry Seinfeld, and Jonathan Schmock, but not Valerie.
Wow.
Yeah. And they all ask him questions. So you just get to see Wayne's.
Yeah. So Wayne, what did you ask him? Are you?
I got up and I just did a, you know, because I was into, I don't know. I just said,
right,
hey, it's great to meet you. Best of luck on your comeback. That's what I say to Bob.
No, you asked him a question. He goes, well, if I was wearing.
Yeah. But then I asked him if he, do you get nervous? Do you ever get nervous when you do a big show like the Academy Awards? And he said, because I had made that crack earlier, he goes, oh, I'd be nervous if I dressed like you.
Yeah. Bob.
I don't know. I loved it. I couldn't believe he was talking to me.
I know. It's amazing. Okay.
No, I love it.
First of all, I just want to tell you, one of my favorite jokes of yours is the Woody Allen joke. Can you tell it? It is one of my favorite jokes. Go ahead.
My favorite joke is, it's great to be here in New York. I'm a big fan of Woody Allen, and say what you will, it's now been 17 years and he's still married to the same daughter. So
hey, baby, I love it. Okay.
Say what you will.
You do the Tonight Show in 94.
Yep.
Did that do anything? No.
Not really.
It's not like in the old days with like Gene Carroll and, you know, all the, where you do the Tonight Show and then it's boom, or the Ed Sullivan Show and it's boom, you know.
But even for people, there's a lot of comedians that did Johnny Carson's Tonight Show.
Right.
And I write about it in the book.
Yeah.
That didn't, nothing happened to
right,
it. A lot of comedians.
It wasn't all
Roseanne Barr and Stephen Wright and, you know, that kind of thing where it's like, or Gary Shandling. Like, I know guys who did 20, over what? 20 Tonight shows.
Kathy Ladman did.
Yeah, she was on the anniversary show. Right. Yeah. So it's, I don't know. I mean, that's sort of a myth about the Tonight Show, that like you did it and it was over. But I was thrilled to do the Tonight Show. I wish I had done it with Johnny, but it didn't happen.
Right. I did it with Jay twice.
Yeah, three same times. Thing. Yeah, we're the same person.
Yeah, that's right. I still have the thing. Did you do well? You did well.
Yeah, you did really well.
I did it.
Oh, wait, I know. You're the one, you went after John McCain or something, right?
The first time I did it, I just did panels because I love telling stories. So I was like, and that was great.
Right.
And then they put me on right after John McCain had something in the news that he had to apologize for. And then it was like, and here's your Jewish lesbo loud Jew, female Jew.
Right.
Talking about her Jewish mother, Jew.
Hey, everyone. You know what I just did? I tore, I poured, and I enjoyed a packet of Liquid IV. Because I love Liquid IV. Liquid IV is a major part of my life. And I just worked out with my trainer, and I had a delicious lemon ginger Liquid IV. That one has a little extra. That has a little green tea in it, and so that's a little caffeinated. So I enjoy that because I needed it today. And, you know, it's getting warmer out, and what does that mean? Summer. Oh, God, please come. It can't come soon enough. And that means you have to hydrate. And that's what Liquid IV does. It hydrates you with benefits like electrolytes, vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. And it has 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in one little stick. And that's why Liquid IV is the number one powered hydration brand in America. Okay? And I love it. I use it every day. Ben's basketball team uses it. It is a science-backed formula that works. It keeps you hydrated. And they have sugar-free. They have sugar-free packets in white peach, green grape, raspberry melon, and lemon lime. Okay? I didn't do the sugar-free. Okay. But Elisa does the sugar-free. So what are you going to do? You're going to stay hydrated because it's very, very important. And Liquid IV has been a longtime sponsor, and I love them. And they are a quality product. And this is what you're going to do. You're going to turn your turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's JUDYGOLD. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, can't even say my name, at liquidiv.com. Got it? You're welcome.
How do you become friends with Gary Shandling?
I auditioned for a show for the part of a, this is again, we're exactly the same. There was an episode where Hank becomes Jewish. Do you know that episode?
Yes.
Okay. Well, in it, there's a bunch of network executives who also are Jewish. And I guess that's the same. So I auditioned for that. Didn't get it. And then from that time, I think I auditioned for the part of the brother.
Right.
And then, but also I have to say, unfortunately, and this is going to sound nepotism, I started going to Judd, who I've known since I moved to California, brought me over to the house and my manager, and I started playing basketball. So Gary kind of knew me when that role came up.
Right.
I hate to say it, but that's the truth.
I really feel like you have to tell Judd that I'm a genius. Okay. So also, I just want to let everyone know, we skipped over the fact that you drove a cab and took kids on high school ski trips as one of your job. Okay. I forgot.
No, I'm laughing.
That.
Yep.
You took them on ski trips like you...
This was one of my great jobs. It was one. Do you understand? I am like... Really, I know this is going to sound creepy, but I'm great with kids. Like, and I'm good with them. I think it's because I know.
Okay.
The door, they break in right now. Hold on. What are you?
Well, you're probably great with kids because you didn't have the chance to really be a kid. And
I don't know if it's, I don't know that, but I just, back I'm to empathetic. Therapy. I'm empathetic. Right. I just,
I am the same. I'm the same way. I'm the same way.
I just, love, I know. Yeah. I also feel like, I get kids. I don't understand the people that like suddenly they're adults and they don't remember anything.
Right. You know what happened? This what is happens? What happened.
Yeah.
This is how, so, you know, I have two kids, Henry and Ben.
Yes. Yeah.
So last weekend, Henry and his girlfriend and his girlfriend's friends are all in Central Park. And Ben, my younger son, who's home from college.
Wait, who plays basketball? Who plays
Ben.
Ben. Okay.
So he's home from college and he's like, oh, I'm meeting Henry in the park. Can I have my baseball mitt, my baseball glove? And he has a basketball. He's going to play a pickup game there, blah, 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 blah. And all I was like, I want to go. Like, that's all I could think about. I want to go play with you guys. Like, because that's what I used to do with them. I'd bring them to the fucking park and we would like play baseball. And then we'd enlist any kid around and I'd take them to the projects or wherever. And we'd all play basketball. And like, I mean, I'm 58 and I'm like, I want, and it's so immature, but it's like, I still feel like they want me there and they don't. When do you write? Because I have to say, you wrote a biography of Pete Maravich.
Yes.
And I am a basketball person, as you can imagine, because, you know, my son plays college basketball. And
I've seen the free throws.
And I love, that's it. I know, he's so upset. It's really bad.
Well, that's, you don't understand, for someone who always wanted to play basketball at that level, like, to me, that's amazing. Of course.
He's so good. And
he does have a nice release. I saw that.
It's amazing. He's amazing. But Pete Maravich was he was incredible. I mean, there were no three pointers when he played, and he made 55? I mean, he was incredible. And then he died really young at 40. Yep. That's so awful. But you wrote a book about him.
Yep.
I might get for my kids. Okay.
Now we're talking.
Because I want you to get a residual. Okay. So you end up writing a lot too, which is great, which is something I was so obsessed with performing. I did write. I mean, I wrote for Rosie and I did some other, but I realize now that I'm writing on a show that I feel like I missed, you know, like I could have written more. You know what I mean?
Well, I have the opposite view. I wish I didn't have to write. Not didn't have to, but it was more like that opportunity opened up for me and I took it.
Right.
Like,
it's so lucrative.
I know. I like performing better.
I mean, I love performing, but I realize I mean, that's all I care about. But I realize now because of the pandemic and I have this writing job, I'm like, oh my God, I really kind of like I love being in the writer's room.
No. It's a tangent. It's a creative process. And I actually like collaborating with other people. I don't know how you are.
I love that. That's my favorite part.
Yeah. Tell me it's bad. I can handle it. Let's make it good. Yeah. Yeah.
You auditioned for the part of Wayne Fetterman.
Yes, I did. Yes,
I did. On the X-Files.
Yes, yeah.
Which is the fucking greatest story. Can you please do tell?
Well, it's very briefly, I met through this, again, I get on the Larry Sanders Show, and I played Gary's brother. And then I'm in this basketball game once a week, and who comes to the game? Is Duchovny, and he's like, Wayne Fetterman, I'm a huge fan of your stand-up. I'm like,
no way.
Yeah. That's what I
know the story, but I'm acting like,
yeah. Of course. I'm like, of course, no way. Of course, no. I don't think anyone knows my stand-up.
Right.
He goes, I love your stand-up. Da, da, da. So we play. And then he comes up to me, goes, you know, I have this idea for this script I'm writing. I think you might be good in it. Can I send you some pay? I'm like, yeah,
no, I'm busy. Yeah,
you can send me some page. It's so ridiculous the way these people. Anyway, so he wrote this part and it was for a producer named, and he goes, I just like the rhythm of your voice. You know, Judy, you have the same thing where it's just like you know. So he wrote this thing and he goes, I'm going to change the name, but right now it's just going to say Wayne Fetterman. And you go, do you like that? I was like, yeah, this is great. I go, you know, this is about a movie within a TV show. So if you want, you can keep it Wayne Fetterman. I think it would be kind of like an interesting joke. Nobody knows who I am. He's like, all right. And then he's right. Next thing I know, I get a phone call from my agent. You're going to audition for the X-Files. They send me the page. It says it's what I've already read. Wayne Fetterman. And then I have to go Cooper, something like that. The guy who runs the X-Files. I go and I'm there and Fred Stoller's there. Like there's other people that are kind of like in my.
Right.
Holy shit. If I can't book the part of Wayne Fetterman, I'm done. I'm done. This will be the end of show business for me. I'll just do something else. I had a nice run. I'm not bitter. And I just went in there and read Wayne Fetterman, read the part. And luckily, Chris.
You got the part. You booked the part of Wayne Fetterman.
But it's not Wayne Fetterman, me. It's a producer named Wayne Fetterman.
Wayne Fetterman. Yes. I actually was working on the Rosie show. And my agent and my manager in L.A., who was so mad that I was moved back to New York to have kids and I was working on the Rosie show.
Right.
Said, oh, my God. There's a part and it's on Everybody Loves Raymond and I'm sending it over and you have to come in and the part is Judy. She's Brad Garrett's partner in the, she hates him. She's really sarcastic. It's Judy. Okay. And my age, everything. I was like, oh my God, this is like words coming out. Like I read it. It's like, this is exactly what I would say. He's like, you have to come here and audition. I was like, oh my God. So I literally, he said, I book a flight where I leave at 7 a.m. I get to LA at 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. I go on the audition and then I take the red eye home, right? Back to New York so I could be at work. Right before I'm leaving, he says, FYI, just want you to know that there's going to be some other people at the audition. And one of them is Queen Latifah. And I'm like, really? So I'm going to fly out there. You think you're not going to give it to me? All right. So anyway, I get there to the audition.
Right.
I'm the only white person in the waiting area. I go in, I do it. It's Lou Schneider. You know, they're all.
Yeah. Those guys. Yeah.
It's like
Scrovan maybe. Yeah.
Right. And I do it. I fly back and Sherry Shepherd gets the part. Good night, folks. Take care. Yeah. You also, I love that. Ronald Reagan, by the way, because I read this in your book, was the one who started residuals for performers. Meanwhile, he ended up being a big, huge a-hole. Now, you don't curse.
I don't.
What is that? I mean, I could die. I would die without saying fuck. I mean, I wouldn't die, but I just, I'm New Jersey. It's very New Jersey.
Yeah, no, I get it. I don't mind. I mean, some of my, obviously, some of the greatest comedians of all time curse tremendously. So it's nothing to do with that. It's just, I don't really like to curse in life. So I don't.
Yes, that's what I'm fascinated by with you.
Yeah.
Is it, did John Abusive Fetterman curse?
I mean, maybe a little, but it wasn't.
No one cursed in your family.
Yeah, I wasn't. I think it's because I've looked into this. It's like who curses, who doesn't curse. And this is what it is, apparently. It's lower class curse, upper class curse, and then middle class, which is where I am in, aspirational, tend not to. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, obviously there's exceptions to it, but as a rule, that's kind of where it and that sort of makes sense, right?
Right.
So
where am I? I don't know.
I know. I don't know. I feel like we're both kind of in the same middle class right?
I feel like my mother, since I'm a kid, I've been cursing. And my mother's like, you talk like a truck driver, Judith. but they had their favorite things. Like my father would say, bitch on wheels, up Schitt's Creek without a paddle. Both of their favorites was goddamn son of a bitch.
Yeah.
But never fuck. You know, never really bad, never the C word. I don't know why I'm cunt. you know, it, but
well, I have to say, you do have a certain flair for your swear. It's yes. like it's you, I only, will admit it. I will admit it.
Thank you. Thank you, Wayne. But only in the house. I remember the first time I heard one of my mother's friends curse. They said shit. And I was like, wow, other people curse. I had no idea. But I have always, I don't know what it is.
And also I have a thing about, this is going to sound really bad and it's not judgmental in any way. I really don't like bitch. And I don't use that word ever. I think it's.
I don't like that word either.
You don't?
No.
Right. Like this. I feel like
it cunt gives me a ping.
Yeah.
Cunt is way better than bitch.
Yeah, it's of course. And so
and there's no words like that for men. That's what also pisses me off.
Of course.
There's yes. toxic masculinity and that's it.
Privileged. Yeah. Hey, you're fucking privileged. So I don't know. Just I found that word really like the little girls have to deal with that word. I feel like yeah, it's close I hate to it. The. It's interesting.
How sensy you are. Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like when people. You know,
but it's used if I find if you switch out the N word when someone uses it, it's sort of in the same way. It's used to kind of categorize somebody.
Right. A group. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like or call it, and then. So anyway, that's just a little.
Thank you. Thank you.
For like, that. I don't care. I mean,
I do. Now you produced the Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling. Mm-hmm. That must have been very hard when he passed. Mm-hmm.
It was. You. It was. We came, it was Judy. It's shocking.
Right.
You know where I'm from?
Yeah.
I'm Plantation, Florida. Like, it's right. like that. I was able to hang out with that guy and play basketball. And then he would take, I was like his plus one for a number of years
right.
at premieres and things like we, it was just, I couldn't believe the whole time I was, and I just loved him. I loved him. And yeah.
It's not fair. It's not. And Trump is still alive, by the way. Trump.
Okay. And now okay. you have to bring it back to Trump.
Sorry.
it's like a, it's you, like a Tourette's thing. It's like a,
you came back to, did you come back to New York to be the head writer for the first,
head monologue third, writer. Yes.
Head monologue writer for, Fallon for the first
yes.
year.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you love that? And you didn't,
I was, me, but, this yeah. is the honest truth. Is I was excellent at that job for the first 6 months, like
right.
getting it up, getting it going. I was on top of it, I think. But then I just kind of hit a wall where I'm like, oh, this is Groundhog Day. Like, this is the same exact job every day. And so I thought I was okay. I thought I was good at the job, but it wasn't great at the job at the end. My favorite thing I got to do was I was the segment producer for the comedians.
Right.
So that was like, okay, this is interesting. Let's get Hannibal on the show. Let's right. get Schumer on the show. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but yeah, it's that was really, a hard job. That's a really hard job for somebody yeah. like me to get up at 9 a.m. and write jokes like that.
Right. At Rosie, we had to have jokes written by 7:30 in the morning.
How did you attended. Do? What was your strategy?
I at that time, as I was younger, and I would get up and I was training for the marathon. So I'd get up at 5, I'd run. Then I'd be at work by 6. I'd go through all the newspapers and we would pitch by 7:30. And that's how I became the human interest producer. Cause I would go through all the newspapers mm-hmm. and I would find all these weirdo, interesting people. And I kept saying, you know, there's this person who blah, blah. And she'd be like, get him. And then I became the, and I did all the kids segments. That was my other thing that I,
all right. Told. So, and yeah. did you like that more than the writing jokes?
Yeah, I was out.
We're exactly the same. Yeah,
I know. Yeah, it's exactly. like so funny because you're writing jokes. It's the same thing every day. And that's what most people do in their lives.
I know.
They get up and go to work and do the same thing every day. And then they retire. And then, you know,
yeah.
and I can't do that. I can't. That's why, because you do so many different things. I do so many different things. You're also a professor, which I also teach. I teach solo performance at the Einhorn School of Performing Arts for primary stages. But I love teaching. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's pretty fun too. Yeah. Sometimes I feel like I'm, it doesn't pay. It's not like I do it for the money, but sometimes I feel like these kids should just be out doing stand up.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. But it is interesting. And I do think that we have to, I feel like stand up, and you really do this in your book. Like you talk about it, it's such an American art form. And it's so unique to us. And when you were talking about who was the woman who, before even the USO went?
And Elsie Janis.
Yes.
Elsie. I don't know why there's not a movie about Elsie Janis. She's on the front lines.
Let's do it.
She's on the front lines.
We just haven't. We have an idea about Elsie Janis. We should pitch that.
And she did impressions and she wasn't a straight stand up. Yeah. But I don't know.
Right. And she went and performed. And I always say this all the time. I say, what other country, when their soldiers are embedded somewhere, send over comedians to make them feel better? No other country does that except for us.
And I'm with you. I'm with you. It's incredible.
Hey, everyone. I love our sponsor, Fast Growing Trees. I don't know if you've noticed when we show the clips of the podcast that I have a new best friend in my office named Avi. And where did I get Avi? At Fast Growing Trees. Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States of America. And I am a happy customer. I love walking in this room and seeing my fig tree, Avi. I talk to Avi. I love it. It makes me happy. And you need plant life in your house. And I have another plant on my piano in the other room. I'm just telling you, it makes your home so much more of a home. So thank you to Fast Growing Trees. They have everything you could possibly want. They have fruit trees, they have palm trees, they have evergreens, they have houseplants, and so much more. And I'm in an apartment in New York, okay? I don't even have a yard outside. And it's changed my life. Do it. Go to Fast Growing Trees. And whatever you're interested in, they have it. They have the perfect fit for your climate, for your space. You can call them and ask them how to take care of your plants. They have so much information and it's so easy to order online. Your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. They have a 30-day alive and thrive guarantee. They have free plant consultation forever. And I have a new best friend, Avi. I love you, Avi. So do it. You don't need a yard. You don't need a lot of space. You just need to make your home a beautiful place. And that's where Fast Growing Trees comes in. This spring, Fast Growing Trees has the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Do it. You're welcome.
The proliferation of social media, which I just want to know, I have a huge resentment for it. And yet this is why.
Did it seem like I did in my book? Did you read my part? No, I don't.
I had a resentment because I felt like, oh my God, I did everything right. And now all the rules changed. And I do think there's good things. You can get more. You definitely get more fans and stuff, but I'm very old fashioned. As you know, I have an answering machine
and plates for us for
I just feel like sometimes I'm just sitting here doing something. I'm like, oh my God, I better post something. Like I don't like it.
But this story keeps getting repeated over and over and over. I'll give you a quick example. In the late 50s, they start with the record albums. Bob Newhart, Shelley Berman. These aren't big nightclub acts.
Right.
They become millionaires. They're like, what? Okay. So Joey Bishop and Alan King, who are the version of you right now, is like, what is this? I know how to make people laugh at a nightclub at the Shaperie. Right. These guys could never play a big club like that. I did everything right. And now suddenly everyone's flocking to these young comedians who are putting their stuff out on record. And Alan King, it's a great quote. It's not in the book, but it's kind of, he's like, why should I sell my act for $1.98 when I can make 18 grand a week in Vegas?
Right.
And it's a good point.
And it does eat up your material. But this
so
is
a new kind of comedian is created where you're like, oh, I have to.
I know. And you really do that in the book and show the. But this is what the resentment comes is that someone will do one funny video and get a million followers, and a club owner will book that person who doesn't know how to do stand up because they're going to sell out. And those audience members are going to be like, oh, I don't really like stand up. You know, and maybe not come. I don't know. That's my.
But can I push back on that just a little bit?
Yes.
Just a little bit. Okay. I agree with you. But that's been going on for a long time.
I know.
It was like Wally Cox when he got on Mr. Peepers, like he got booked into nightclubs and couldn't do the act.
Right.
And they were. So it'll be a short thing if they can't do it.
Right.
But look at Bo Burnham. Do you know that guy? Bo Burnham. He got famous at age 16 doing a funny song as a high school junior in his Hamilton, Massachusetts bedroom. And then he was like, oh, I want to do stand up. And he went and he worked and we're, and now is one of the most creative stand ups working today. And
well, I'm going to look him up.
I think you would love him.
Oh, I am going to look him up. But then you have like the Stormy Daniels people.
Yes,
like,
I know.
I'm going out. And it's like, no. Okay.
No, I mean, I understand that. Yes, I just feel like it's like you're railing against something that's just that's what it is.
I'm not railing. I'm saying I'm annoyed by it.
Okay.
That I have to do it. All right. Thank you.
No, I hate. Look, I don't like even posting stuff. I feel weird.
Right. I hate it. Okay.
This has really been interesting to me. Like,
really?
Well, it's just because I know we have to wrap up, but I remember we really kind of bonded a little when we went to Kornfeld's wedding. Do you remember that at all?
I played piano at his wedding.
Yes. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. I get her now. Cause I feel like you were a little like younger than me. So it was like, I was already I was going to LA.
Big. Right. But I'm very
I never got big.
No. My stature of physical. I'm big and I'm loud and people look at me like, ugh. You know, like it's like, it's just so funny.
Still? You feel like that's still?
Please. Do you know how many times young comics will be like, I was so afraid of you. I'm like, oh my God, why? Okay. So I always ask, first of all, before we hang up, because I love you, I always ask two questions, but I just want you to tell the Zappatite commercial story.
Well, again, this is
because it's just so me.
Okay, this is what happened. There's a new product, and they scour LA for the young comedians, and the four young comedians they find are Pam Madison, myself, Adam Sandler, and Tim Allen. Those are the four. So I feel like I'm in it,
right?
Zappatites is frozen, microwavable food. So you have to say it, then take a bite, go, this is delicious or something. And then you're not supposed to swallow because they do numerous takes. There's something called a spit bucket to your left, and you have to spit out the Zappatite food. And first of all, I'm not good at spitting. Like, just some people know how to spit. You know, I don't know. They just immediately, they can like spit. For like 8 feet or something. I can't. Like, a lot of times when I'm driving, even driving, I like try to spit out the window.
Yeah, a lot of people, they can do it. It goes really far.
Yeah.
Kind of like the guys who close one nostril and the snot comes right out. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Just like they have a knack for it. I don't have a knack for spitting.
Right.
So again, like sometimes I would try to spit out the window, but it would land in the little crack where the window is and go down on the window and then you'd roll it. Anyway, I'm terrible. So I had to just keep spitting into this bucket during the whole thing. And I kept getting on my shirt. It was bad. Is that the story? I don't know.
No, that all those people
what
became huge stars.
Oh yeah. That's true. That is true.
Yeah. Okay.
No, whatever. Tim. Yeah.
Tim Allen.
I know. Yeah. Look,
Adam Sandler. That's,
again, this is the Jerry Seinfeld. I got to stop comparing myself to Tim Allen.
It's just so me. It's so me.
Is it?
Yes.
Give me an example.
Oh, please. I did my half hour comedy hour with Marc Maron. Janine Garofalo. Let's see. These are all my
right.
Who else? John Stewart. I mean, it was just like, forget it.
I know.
Ray it's Romano. Right.
Yeah, I got it. No, you're right. You're right. It's hard.
Yeah.
Are you all right?
All right. So I always ask two questions because I am very into mental health. I have a lot of anxiety and depression, and I've been on meds, and I've had not being able to talk. I mean, like, I have a lot of mental health. And you are a very self-help person. Yep. You're very positive. You're always saying, I'm just happy to be alive. I could have like a little, all right. Which I try to do, like I meditate and everything, but it's like really hard when I get up in the fucking morning and I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, that's my first thing is like, oh no. There's a George Burns quote that you love. Which, can you say that?
Sure. I remember it. I remember reading it when I was a kid. He'd say, I'd rather be a failure in show business than a success at making felt hats.
I love that. I might have to write that down.
Yeah. And I was just like, oh, I get it.
The quote, nothing is as bad as it seems. The good news is nothing is as bad as it seems.
The bad news is nothing is as good,
as it seems. Which is also, I mean,
that's very Zen, right? That's kind of Zen. It's just like,
so what do you do? What do you do for your mental health? I'm going to assume you're not on meds because you're very,
no meds. Yeah. No meds. I play basketball like your kids. Yes. I try to do some exercise that helps. I just try to be grateful. I mean, like that's my go-to. Like
hashtag
whenever
grateful.
Because when you're grateful, it's you know, the less narcissistic I'm narcissistic. I'm about me thing. I read a book, Right. It's like, so whenever I kind of get away from that and become just like, oh my God, I'm just grateful I live in this country.
Right.
Grateful I was born at this time.
Right.
Grateful I was could somehow eke out a living in show business.
Right.
This thing that, like, as a little kid in Plantation, Florida, right, I had a dream of. Seems absurd. I mean, how many people?
I feel like we need music for this. Yeah.
I know. Ahead. I'm sorry.
I love it.
This is supposed to be comedy.
No, I love it.
So it's I'm legitimate. People who know me know that I'm like legitimately grateful. And the thing I miss, Judy, of when people ask me about the pandemic, I miss doing those gigs. I really miss it, but I really love this. I really like hanging out with comedians because they're damaged and they're funny. And they're even the worst ones are like, the worst ones are terrible, but most of them are interesting. They look at life in an interesting way. And I love riffing with them. And even you, when you do the fake crying, I just get the biggest kick out of it.
Right.
I mean, it's a big part of my life. It's a big part of my life. And I love it.
My final question that I always ask, because, you know,
I thought that was the final one. I thought I did a good wrap up.
The final is,
yeah,
because I call the podcast Kill Me Now, because I get aggravated over every little thing because I am my parents' daughter. What pisses you off more than anything in the entire world? Come on, you know you get mad at something.
I know you think I do.
Something has to fucking get your goat. Wayne, you cannot be a real Jew if you're not annoyed about something.
I know. I
injustice, hunger.
Well, first of all, Mom, this is my thing. I mean, my big thing in life is like, I because I was the youngest kid for a while, like I hate anything that's unfair. Yeah, that would be my Achilles heel. Like,
And
I hate that people don't see it. And then when I bring it up, they think I'm a crazy person.
Gaslighting. It's so gaslighting. I am the same. I'm like, but wait, why is this person allowed to get away with that?
Yes. Yeah.
150%.
Yeah. So that is, I would say that's my Achilles heel. I really, and I see it in sports and whatever, whenever it happens, that's why I can never be like a Yankee fan because I'm just like,
my kids love it, but I can't be what about the taking the air out of the footballs? Like, how does
Brady
happen?
Brady. Yeah, I know.
Like, it pisses me off so much.
I know. I'm very curious about what medications you're on, because I'm like, it just interests me. Just
okay. Right now I'm on Wellbutrin.
What is that?
It's an antidepressant.
And how does it work? Isn't there two kinds of antidepressants?
Yeah, there's SSRIs. I'm on two SSRIs. And Luvox. I'm on a little bit of Luvox. I'm not on high dosages of them. Then I take a trazodone to sleep.
And every night?
Yeah. Wow. Because I can't stay asleep. That's the problem.
Oh, I gotcha. My joke is that I've been microdosing Claritin.
Hey, now.
that's the kind of material I write over.
That's funny. Not really. So Wainola, I can't thank you enough. You're such a delight. I'm so happy that you're positive and successful. And I really now want to pitch that movie about the
Elsie Janis.
Yes. But you know, you're going to go to Judd and be like, Elsie Janis. And then you're going to do a movie about Elsie Janis and I'm not going to be included.
Is that how that what just spun in your head?
Yes.
Oh, now I understand the Luxburg or whatever the name of your medication is. What was it called? Super Lux?
Luvox. Luvox.
That all just happened in your head.
Yep, that all just happened. Oh, he's going to go to Judd. They're going to do it. And I'm like, all
right. The thing, right?
Yeah.
Hey.
So
on Hulu this fall.
Yeah, Hulu. The movie Judy is not a part of. Well, good luck with your book, The History of Stand Up. It's fucking great. Good, you're doing Fallon in a couple of weeks, right? A few weeks to push the book. And you're a delight. And I hope that when I come to LA, we can hang out.
I would love it. I would love
How
it.
Fun
I
get would the that biggest. Be?
You know, I went to your Nowhere Comedy Club show.
No, you didn't. I
yes,
love
I did.
You.
Yes.
Oh, I paid. So loving, supportive. I love you, Wayne.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, of course.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for listening to part two of Kill Me Now with the one and only Wayne Fetterman. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling, and the podcast and my life would not be possible without the help of Brittany Jo Sowards. Please subscribe. Please leave a review. 5 stars. Please buy my book. Yes, I can say that when they come for the comedians, we're all in trouble. You can go to my website, judygold.com. There's links to buy it wherever. If you do buy it on Amazon, please review it and give me 5 stars. You know, all these other books have like way more reviews than I do. And it's really annoying. Okay? And it's a great book. It's a great book. Get the audiobook. People love the audiobook. Whatever. You must watch on Hulu, Hysterical. It is a documentary about women comics. You have to watch it. It's really good. It's fucking great. My good friends are in it. It's just fucking great. You'll recognize, you know, Jessica Kirsten and Rachel Feinstein and Carmen Lynch. Who else? Marina Franklin. All have been on the show. Aunt Kelly Bachman, Bonnie McFarlane. They've all been on the show. And it's a great, great look at what it's like to be a woman in the stand-up business, you know, which I've been for quite some time because I'm old. Anyway, there you go. I just want to say thank you for listening. I really love you guys. Please wear a mask. I can't fucking believe this shit isn't over yet. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram for all of my thoughts, feelings, and my anger. And all the dates I'm performing. I am out there performing. So you can check me out at Judy Gold, J-E-W-D-Y-G-O-L-D. You know, like Jew, gold, because I'm a Jew. And listen. I hope to see you soon in person. And as we always say, so long.
And everything was wonderful. I'll see you soon. Thank you for the visit. So long.